Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. Doran Dickerson here, Nicholas Harry Callis behind the glass, and Jim Colony. Dan Zangrilli's running a little bit late. There's a little bit of traffic, so he'll probably be here in the next segment. But I want to hit you with this, okay. Jim. To start off with the Pirates, or we could go, actually go in a different direction. We were talking about really nepotism in sports.
You mentioned that with respect to what? With LeBron
Bronny
James,
his son getting drafted to the Lakers. And, you know, just going through just some of the names of all time and the nepotism. And I kind of rest right here. Like, with nepotism, like, there's going to be children of people who are successful, whether it's broadcasters, whether it's, athletes, whether it's celebrities. There's going to be children that want to fall in that path. Why wouldn't it? It's probably in their blood, and I do believe that. But whenever it's only nepotism to me whenever they're not good enough. Like, whenever there are kids of people who are successful doing the same things that they did, and they are good, okay, that makes sense. Like, you actually work to be that good. But there are a lot of examples where children of people who have done the respective thing aren't any good, and they're just there because of their name. Like, and that's kind of where I rest. Like Ian Eagle's son is very, very good. He's very good at what he does. But there are some people's names out there that, and I won't throw anybody under the bus, Collinsworth, that aren't that good, and they're just there because of their name. So that's kind of where I draw the line.
You know, it's interesting because I taught – there are a couple – some. This is quite a while ago now, actually. I taught some classes at Duquesne and like broadcast – sports broadcasting. And, you know, one of the things is – now, it does help. Now, I mean, you guys are doing a great job, okay? It doesn't hurt that you're Doran Dickerson, who was a high school All-American, college All-American, NFL player, to get you in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to stay there, you need to work at it, and you need to do a good job. You need to be invested in it, which you are. You know, the other guys. I used to say when it's like who you know, they say, well, you in order to get a good job, you got to know somebody. It's who you know. In broadcasting, it's okay. Who you know can get you in the door, but if you suck, then a lot of people are going to know that you suck.
Right.
And that's basically it. But why guys at a network level, they're also put under more of a microscope. Oh, that's Collinsworth kid. I hate Collinsworth. Steeler fan. I hate Collinsworth. So I don't like. And so sometimes that person does not get a fair shake. It kind of works both ways. And I remember a good friend of mine is and I've known Sean McDonough for years, because that's how I first met Mike Sullivan, by the way, was when I met Sean after a Red Sox game. He was doing the Red Sox. I was on my way home, and we passed a place, a night spot in Cleveland Circle near Boston College. And the two guys at the door that night when we went in were Mike Sullivan and David Quinn. Yes, I do remember that. I remember those guys playing hockey at BU. But anyway, Sean, initially, he went to Syracuse, okay? And now there's a lot of Syracuse guys out there. Well, Filippone's one of them.
Yep.
But the Syracuse Mafia, and there's a lot of them that are out there, like Tirico and Costas is one of them, and so forth and so on. But the thing is, and Sean's dad, Will McDonough, was the original print guy to go national network on NBC. And this is, like, again, 40, 50 years ago. And so a lot of people thought that Sean got his jobs because his dad was Will McDonough. And part of that may have been true, but the fact is that Sean is great. And, of course, Pittsburgh fans aren't fond of Sean because one of his first assignments was the 92 NLCS, and he's the guy, he's safe!
That's right.
You know, and that was Sean, the big call. And, you know, he had a big call at the end of the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. He's real good no matter what the sport is, whether it's hockey, whether it's basketball, whether it's baseball, whether it's football. He can do all those sports, yep. And he can do it as well as anybody. But he was accused of the nepotism thing. So that's a tough one to me to speak of. You mentioned Ian Eagle's son. And he is. I haven't heard as much of him, but when I did, I was. And again, I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute.
Right, right.
And I know how good Ian Eagle is. I always thought he was underrated for a lot of time because he was in the shadow of Jim Nantz, but now he's more prominent and he's great. And if his kid's as good as he is, then he deserves to get all that. And then you didn't know this. Okay, one of the best sports shows on TV. A lot of people think the best. Is Inside the NBA.
Yes.
And Ernie Johnson is the traffic cop there who has to deal with guys like Barkley and Shaq. You never know what's going to happen. Kenny Smith is sort of in the middle of it too. Ernie Johnson's dad was Ernie Johnson, the Braves play-by-play guy, for years. And so you didn't even know that.
I had no idea.
Nepotism involved in that? Yeah, probably. But you know how Ernie Johnson's great.
He's one of the best.
So I don't think that these guys get to that level. Phil Simms has a son who's involved as well. A lot of times, I think they face an uphill battle because of the expectations. And you know, somebody that I don't know well at all, but he's very successful locally now playing golf, is Austin Lemieux.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're him playing hockey in Pittsburgh, and your dad is Mario frickin' Lemieux, and the pressure that was on him, and everybody expected, well, he's gonna be great, and he was really good as a hockey player. But you know, golf, maybe golf's his thing. I'm hoping he can turn that. Not that he needs to turn anything into anything, but you know, the expectations that are on guys. I mean, Neil Walker's the son of a major league player. His brothers played pro ball. So there's inherent, you know, everybody says, oh, I want to see this guy. Is he any good? Really? I mean, you know, so there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on that.
It's a lot different, I think, with this LeBron James situation, because LeBron James is playing for the Lakers, and he drafted and had a hand in drafting his son that had 2 points, averaged like 2 points last year for USC. There's a guy named Blake Henson who played for Pitt, who signed with the Lakers after the draft, that is a 10 times better player than him, that they should have used that pick on. Not being biased, I'm just using his name as a situation.
It's funny, I had that. I was talking with some, this is sort of unrelated, but we're some folks, most of my sports talk now is done on the golf course, and people are asking me about Bub Carrington, and do you think he'll get drafted, and when, and why. And I said, you know what I said? I said, really? I said, it's all on potential and his mental makeup, his body, and everything that he projects as being whatever. Right now, I mean, Blake Henson is a more ready basketball player because he's 23 years old versus 19 years old. But in terms of NBA potential, you know, Bub's going to get drafted, and then Blake, he might be able to hook on with somebody, but they're not going to take as much of a chance on a guy who's 22, 23 years old when you can draft a 19-year-old instead. But, you know, the nepotism thing but from Bronny's standpoint, you know, what kind of pressure is on these guys, on him? How do you live in that shadow?
You get out of it.
And yet,
right?
I thought in some ways that maybe it would have made sense, and maybe this is kind of selfishly speaking, now that Drew Joyce is the head coach at Duquesne, there was some brief talk.
I believe
He was LeBron's point guard.
Right, and he's his godfather. He's Bronny's godfather.
Yes, and would that have made some sense to get him to transfer here, come in? But the same thing would have happened here. Wherever he goes, he's going to be LeBron's kid.
Mm-hmm.
And to be one of the, and some people will say it's a generational thing. I'll always be a Bill Russell guy. Then there's Michael Jordan. There's Wilt. And now there's LeBron James. And who's better? Well, you don't know who's the greatest of all time, but he's in the conversation. And some people will say he's definitely number one. And yet to be the son of the greatest of all time, ugh.
Yeah, it's tough. And you got to make your own way.
How can you have fun?
You can't. You can't, but I mean, it's a lot harder now. It's way harder than it needs to be, I do believe. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peter Township.
Zangrilli just attacked me.
Visit them at southhillskia.net. We'll talk to Dan Zangrilli next. Fan Morning Show brought to you by Guardian Protection. Thorn Dickerson, Jim Colony, Nicholas Harry Cowles behind the glass, and Dan Zangrilli's here.
Hey.
Dan, how you doing?
Good. Good morning. How we doing?
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I meant to ask Neil when we had him on if he still has that place on the Manatee River. I'm sure he does.
1.193.
And he's still got, what, like 5 or 6 years left on it?
No.
11 years?
Yeah.
2035.
Good for him. There's actually, I think, a few deals that are better than that.
What?
If I'm not mistaken. I think I read something somewhere, and I hate the fact that I've said it now, and I can't back it up, but there have been a few deals signed after folks have looked at the Bonilla deal. I mean, what is the Ohtani deal going to look like?
Yeah, it's way better than that.
I mean,
what, he's getting, what, 2.5 now?
And the tax savings?
The tax savings.
He's dodging those California taxes in a big way.
10 years, what, $20 million, and he's getting $700?
Right, and I don't know if there's any interest on that deferred money or if he's just doing this for the tax savings. We need a sports accountant in here, but there are a lot of deals out there like it that aren't as well publicized as Bobby Bonilla Day. But the point remains, he's a trailblazer. He is a forefather. He is, I think, a Mount Rushmore for sports business contracts.
Yes.
Put him right up there.
They tell you if you were to win one of the big jackpots in a lottery, that you take the lump sum. You do not take the annuity payment. But in this instance, I think Bobby's done okay for himself.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
The best part of the deal is it was spawned by Bernie Madoff telling the Wilpons, nah, you're good. Oh, yeah, we've got it. We've got your money socked away in this investment.
Well, yes, they did.
And you're gonna be fine because these investments that we have you in, you're going to more than be able to pay out, and it's going to be such a great investment. That's the funniest part of the whole deal for me, that the Wilpons got duped. I think it's the Wilpon. But anyway, yeah, it was Bernie Madoff that gave the Mets the advice to say that, yeah, you're good. Sign this deal.
It's amazing. It is amazing. I couldn't imagine sitting there when I was 50 years old just collecting a check every
mailbox
July.
Money.
Man.
Do you think he has like a... He's got to have like a big party at the place at some point.
Yeah.
You know, everybody come over, you know, at least
in the
back.
Did you see his place on the Manatee River?
I have not, no.
I can't remember. I mean, I couldn't pick it out now, but I remember going by it and having the captain explain to me that, so there's Bonilla's house over there. I'm like, okay.
Dan, the Pirates went 3-for-3 in their road series. One against the Reds, they win that series, and then obviously against the Braves, they won the last game, which was yesterday. 3-for-3 in their road series. Give us the pros, give us the cons that you've taken away from the last six games, and we know that they're off today, and next segment we'll dive into really what's ahead, which is kind of scary.
You know, they're just doing the bare minimum just to hang around, but as they're doing that, they're just slowly leaking backwards. It's not like a precipitous fall off. It's like a half game every other two or three days because they've done nothing over the last 6 weeks, or really since they started the year so well, where they've strung together a nice little run, which if you're going to be a postseason team, you need to have a 7 out of 8. You need to go off for 15 of your next 19 games, and they just don't do that.
They've got the pitching to do it. That's the frustrating part of it.
100%, but here they sit now 3 games back in the wild card. Everybody says there's plenty of time, and yeah, there is. That's true. But I see nothing where they're going to be able to cobble together a big burst of wins to separate themselves from the middle. But, I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams from Atlanta to San Francisco that are right there with those 3 games out. It's so congested. And with this team just alternating wins and losses, during the bare minimum, 3-3 on the 6-game road trip, 3-3 on the 6-game homestand. They need a few 4-2s in there. They need a few 5-1s in there. And I don't see this team able to do that at this moment. And what's going on is, you know, Milwaukee's starting to pull apart from the pack. San Diego, St. Louis, they're putting together these stretches. And they're going to pull away. And I don't think the Pirates are going to be able to.
Which is why Saturday was so frustrating.
100%.
Because you were going to take the lead and then, you know, would they have been able to hang on? I don't know. We saw what Chapman did yesterday where he gave up some hits and could have happened. But they would have been at least ahead for a bit and not wasted a Paul Skeen start.
Well, how many Saturdays have occurred? That's the issue, and that's going to be the undoing of this team if it's not happened already. Jim, there have been 18 Saturdays. They have 18 losses after their starting pitcher has completed at least 6 innings. More often than not, and I haven't dug into every single one of those 18 losses where a starting pitcher for the Pirates has gone at least 6 innings, but more often than not, that's a quality start, something that if you did the bare minimum offensively, you would have otherwise won that game, or you should have won at least 2/3 of those games. That 18 should probably be a 4 or a 5 in that loss column. And, you know, you couple that, it's not all on the offense. There's been some bullpen malfunctions along the way packed into that 18 loss total, if you really peel it apart. But that, to me, is just the most unforgivable thing that, yeah, Saturday stunk, but guess what? That happened to Skeens last weekend, right, where he went 7 innings, gave up 1 run, and they lose 1-0. There's a lot of Saturdays that occurred this year.
Outside of Reynolds, would you say Telez is the most positive thing that has happened in the last month, maybe? I mean, obviously we have Skins, you had the pitching, but maybe Reynolds and I guess Ortiz, you could throw him in there. Let's get to the positives.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, offensively it is Telez, and there's really not much to speak of. I mean, Oliveras for like a little bit. There was a maybe a 10-day stretch where you thought that he was getting into something. And yes, I mean, they are getting healthier from the pitching perspective, though that didn't exactly pan out with Martin Perez on the mound. And you really want to have a six-man rotation if you can. Ortiz is a really nice asset to have, whether he's used in the bulk relief role as he has been, or if you are tempted, and I think the Pirates are more so now than they ever have at any point this season, to slot him in the rotation, whether that's the fifth slot. If Martin Perez doesn't pan out, I'm not necessarily confident that he's going to have a good second half based on his track record last year. Or if you do want to expand it with him as part of the picture into a six-man, because they really have to start they really have to start getting creative with the Jones and Skeens workload.
Well, Dan, I mean, it's just not looking great.
And you know who burst my bubble? I talked to Dan O'Dowd, who I think is a really good, measured baseball guy, former GM of the Rockies, MLB Network analyst. He dives into the analytics, but he takes a lot of them, and he understands them and appreciates them. He takes a lot of them, and then he throws them in the trash, and he'll maybe use 20% of stuff out there. He just doesn't see a pathway forward, I think, for the Pirates. They're close, but just not quite there to take the next step. And that sort of put a pin in my balloon a little bit. But when you step back and listen to him objectively, it's hard to think that whatever they would add, if they go out and make a big move, Dorn, Jim, it's gonna be tough. I don't know if whomever they would acquire will move the needle enough for them offensively to support this pitching, unfortunately.
Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Let's take a look at what the Pirates have upcoming on their schedule. We talked about it a little bit earlier, talked about it with Neil Walker, and it doesn't sound good. So if we're going down that path of negativity, we might as well continue it.
You know, here's the good news, though. As soon as you start to think that it's a lost cause,
here they come.
Things turn around a little bit, but not enough. Now they would started if they could take. And I remember, if you can take two out of three, right? Most series are three games. You win two out of three, you're going to be great, because that's 108 wins over the course of a season. You win 2/3 of your games. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But if you can just win two out of three, maybe split a four-game series here and there, win two out of three again, just slowly climb. But as you point out, there are so many teams to climb over, it's going to be difficult to do.
And I just don't see, when you go on a big stretch, which this team needs, every team needs it, they have to get hot offensively, where like everybody is clicking. There's maybe only at most two or three guys hitting in that nine slot batting card that you're like, oh, okay, you know. But yeah, to your point, Jim, Sawinski will probably turn it on at some point. Hayes will probably turn it on at some point, but it'll be mid-August when they're 5.5 games out in the wild card.
Social media's biggest loser, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Reserve your consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com. Social media's biggest loser is not Bobby Bonilla, as his picture is all across social media today, as he is receiving his yearly payment of $1.193 million from the Mets that he retired in 2001. So that's when those payments started. And they end in the year 2035. So he is not social media's biggest loser today. They got the Cardinals series. Then they have the Mets. Then they have the Brewers. Mm. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, trying to look at some positives, not many, and a lot of negatives, and especially as we talked to Neil Walker earlier about the Saturday game and Oliveras, that slide. Henry Davis, a guy that we thought that we could count on this year, you know, he's been injured, and he had a concussion, and now it is to believe that he has another concussion, re-injured, I guess, his head or his brain, whatever you want to say, while he was rehabbing. So not looking good as the Pirates do head into this stretch of league play, of conference play.
We are, yeah, we're going to find out by the All-Star break. We'll know. The season's here over the next 9 days. So it's right here. If they're 4-5 or 5-4, it's just not going to be good enough. I think you need 6-3 over these next nine. The double games, six of them with St. Louis and Milwaukee. And you may as well count the Mets in that as well, because they're, I'm sorry, there's a four-game series against the Mets. I do beg your pardon. So you got the 10 games. I bet you we're talking about another 5-5. I'm going to come back on the air. Well, you know, they're still hanging around there. They're 5-5. But at this point, they'll leak backwards half a game every 3 days or whatever it is, and they'll be four back in the wild card. So 5-5, you'll say, oh, that wasn't too bad. They're hanging in there. No, because other teams are putting together those streaks. But the season will be determined, I think, by the end of that Milwaukee series. I hate to say
it's getting, it's getting late early, as yes. Yogi Berra once said.
It's getting late early. Yeah. And, man, I don't – I mean, what can you do? What would you do? I don't know. And my conversation, I keep going back to this over the weekend with Dan O'Dowd. He would not, by the way, trade any of the pitching prospects.
Mm-hmm.
I found that to be interesting. I'm not necessarily sure I wouldn't do that, but how much of what – let's say hypothetically you make the move. You go for it and you add this bat. It's still just one spot in that lineup. You just need far more consistency from Triolo, Grandal, Michael A. Taylor, Key Brian Hayes. They've all been terrible this year. Terrible. And even Nick Gonzalez is starting to go into the toilet. I hate to say it, like, because he's such a good hitter, and I think he's going to be just fine, but he was, for a moment, carrying this team for the better part of 3-4 weeks. Well, now, the last two, he's come back down to earth in a big way. So you're looking at Reynolds, a streaky O'Neill Cruz, a fairly consistent Andrew McCutchen in what he gives you in his at-bats and plate appearances, but still, he's a complementary piece to this offense. He shouldn't be in that big three. Hayes should be there. Suwinski should be there, carrying the water. And even Taylor, just a little bit of pop. He hit 21 home runs last year. The guy's got a sub-500 OPS. So bring in
What happens to these guys? And I know it's too easy to blame. Of course, we're not going to blame the hitting coach, right? We blame the offensive coordinator, the hitting coach, the third base coach. Those guys are the power play coach. Blame the coaches. At some point, the players have to be accountable. But what happens then to a guy like that all of a sudden loses it? It's not like he's ancient.
I mean, and that's the biggest indictment, because nobody, from a position player standpoint, I think who's gotten markedly better or measurably better under the hitting coach or even under the Derek Shelton regime. They have pitching success stories. That's where you start. So that's the good thing. But, and I'm not sure if you're asking about the coaches, the hitting coach, or the players in particular.
I'm just throwing it out there just because you want to look for somebody to blame, but why there's a fall off. And I know Taylor, he's not ancient, but he's not young either. But, I mean, if he hits a wall, do major league players hit the wall at age 33? I don't think so, usually.
And I keep going back to this O'Dowd conversation, because I asked him the question, you know, the Pirates, you know, at the 81-game mark, what did they have? The 39 wins, they were on pace for 78. That's only a 2-win improvement over last year's 76. That's year 5. And then I asked O'Dowd, essentially, what are the measuring sticks you as a former general manager were looking at for somebody completing their 5th year in a year that you're really supposed to take a big step forward? At least that's what the owner has said. That's what the internal expectations are. And he said, I'm not going to jettison a guy based on 3, 5, even 6 or 7 wins. I'm looking at how much better did we get internally with our young core guys. And if we're on the upswing and we're improving, you can win or lose a game for a variety of reasons. But if your young guys aren't getting better, then that is the biggest red flag. And, well, I think that applies here. There have been some guys that have regressed that are part of this future that you've expunged a lot of trade capital on to acquire. They've fallen off. They've tailed off. And that's an indictment when your young guys are not performing, or B, taking steps backwards. That's when evokes change.
Why do you think they made the decision to send Delay down and not Grindahl?
Probably because of Bart's out of options. So once his minor league rehab stint comes to a close, you have to make a decision on what you're going to do with it. So just simply roster logistics, Delay has options.
Mm-hmm.
You still kind of like Joey Bart. He was a second overall pick a few years back. Let's try to keep him around and run out and see what we have here to grow our sample size to make the most informed decision. Delay was easy. Well, we can just send him here and let him be there while we concentrate on this guy.
Do you think O'Neill Cruz is disengaged at times?
Yeah, I do. I think you saw against Cincinnati.
You said that to us.
He was locked in, and then in Atlanta there were moments where just like where is he? You know what I mean? Engagement is a great word, but then you see what he's able to do yesterday. And I don't know what that is. That's youth. That's inexperience.
Yeah.
That's just immaturity for a guy that is literally, even though he's been around a while, has cobbled together only one full season of experience. But it's been bits and pieces, and his service time is that of basically 3 years, but because of the injury. So he's still young, raw, and I know that sounds like an excuse, but that's the reality. He's got one full year in, so he's going into the early stages from a games played, plate appearances perspective. He's in like mid-April of year two.
Would you say De La Cruz is more advanced than him right now?
No.
The same?
I think they're the same guy.
Yeah, I no doubt. It's the only thing that De La Cruz has on O'Neill Cruz is stolen bases.
Mm-hmm.
If you line up their stats, their games played, they're the same player.
De La Cruz has more errors.
He does. But a ton more stolen bases. He's 3 years younger.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like from a general manager's perspective, mm-hmm. you're like, hey, you want to pick one or the other, you might go Ellie just because of here and now. Like he's got a longer runway, I think. But they are the same player. I mean, they just measure up literally and figuratively almost exactly the same. And it's so cool to watch when those two. That was a fun series against Cincinnati, just from a pure talent perspective. And you could see each other, you know, it's like two of the best in the game. When they get together, they want to put on a show, and that's when baseball gets really fun.
Brian Reynolds is not my wife's favorite player because we were at that game, that Wednesday afternoon game, the Keller game, where both pitchers were great,
mm-hmm.
and then she was dreading extra innings because we had nice seats, thank you, Pirates, but we were out in the sun. There was no shade. It was hot, and she wanted to go, and then Reynolds hit the home run in the eighth inning. So now, in 2 hours and 10 minutes, we were out of there. Linda Colony loves Brian Reynolds.
My man can hit the you-know-what out of the ball.
Yes, he can.
And he is just...
But why can't the Pirates... And I'm not including Reynolds in this either because he didn't come up through the organization. And
a little bit, but...
Not really. I mean, he maybe spent 1 year in the minors here. In the because the Pirates won the McCutcheon trade. They actually did. But how come they just haven't... Who's the last hitter that they've developed up through their organization from draft/signing to the majors?
And
Cruz has a chance to be, although, no, he came for Tony Watson, right?
He did, but he was in the minors for so long. So he may as well have been a homegrown guy.
They've never developed a first baseman.
They haven't had a first baseman since Willie Stargell, with no disrespect to Kevin Young.
In terms of like a just a big guy that can just hit the heck out of the ball.
I want you to think about what I just said.
No, we talked about that earlier, mm-hmm. and I was thinking the same thing. I didn't say it.
That's going on 50 years.
I was thinking the same thing about Stargell, that he was the last first baseman. And I remember what I was talking about when Neil Walker told me way back when they first drafted Josh Bell, and he went to work out in Bradenton, and Walker and McCutcheon were there, and Neil came back and said, holy crap, they ought to make this guy a first baseman right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, they didn't. And then by the time they did, it was kind of like too late. And he's still a real good hitter, but they just get at a position that, not that it's easy to find guys like that, but wouldn't you think over the course, like you said, 50 years, that they'd be able to find a guy that could establish himself as a 200 career home run guy, and they just haven't done it.
Yeah, even by way of happy accident. You know, you can luck into that, just blind luck. You would just think law of large numbers.
But even when that, you see a guy in the, was it Mason Martin? Was that the guy's name? Mm-hmm. I think that you see him in the low minors and you're thinking, oh, okay, they're going to finally get some guy that can, okay, he strikes out a little bit, but for some reason, Big Country just popped into my head. of all the great nicknames, they just haven't been able to develop that. And even power hitting outfielders, really?
You look at some of the years that Kevin Young put together, they're really impressive, but it was, maybe 4 or 5 years, which is as close as they've come, and he retired 20 years ago. To answer your question, who's going to be the next big hitter? I really like Tamara Johnson, but unfortunately, he's trending in the wrong direction. Nick Gonzalez will probably be that guy, I assume. A lot of folks, not inside the Pirates organization, but outside the Pirates organization, have really kind of gone out of their way to say, boy, he can hit. Dan O'Dowd loves him. I keep going back to the conversation. A lot of the other scouts that you see at the ballpark, they really like Nick Gonzalez. So I think he's a developmental success story. Would love to see how he finishes. I think he's the next hitter. But as far as first baseman, jeez, no idea.
We'll wrap up the show. Coming up next.
Yeah. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Starkey is knocking on the window like we're not on air right now. His personal awareness is just down. He'll just pop in here, just not even realize. Look at him just walking around. Sometimes he'll bounce a golf ball down the hallway.
He's like a nervous clucking hen. When I see him walking by, I hear hens clucking. don't you? Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's just... Just
on another non-pirate note, there's a Gladiator 2 movie coming out.
Uh-huh.
There is?
Yes.
I'm seeing Denzel Washington as the emperor.
Yes.
What? Oh, okay.
Are you not entertained?
Right.
Is this not why you were here? And there's a Roadhouse. There's another Roadhouse that I haven't seen yet.
I've seen that 3 times already.
Is that any good?
I liked it. Not everybody liked it. People think it's cheesy, but I think it's for what it's worth. I think the first one was kind of cheesy in a way.
Of course it was, right. But I mean, so the second, mind yes. your own business, Dad.
But you got to love movies like that. I'd watch it. If you like the first one, you might as well watch it.
You know what? You love all of the free PG-13 cheesy movies that are available on these streaming devices that come equipped with your TV.
Yes. Yes.
That is your...
Yes, B-movies, all that stuff. Like, yes, that's just right up my alley. I know it's cheesy, and I know that what I'm getting myself into, but... I take it for what it's worth. But
crappy production, crappy writing, it's for me.
It's for me.
Roadhouse and Gladiator, and these are the originals I'm talking about, are two movies that, this is guy style. Like, if you're surfing through and see what's on TV, and if you see it, that it's on, and you can see how far into the movie that it is, you can pretty much go know exactly what's going on in that movie. And you can tell, okay, Sam Elliott's about to show up at the Double Deuce. and when he is... You know that it's like about an hour in, maybe about 45 minutes, 50 minutes in. You have to tune in to see Sam Elliott show up.
Right.
Exactly right. Exactly. And the same thing with Gladiator. When you know that he's in the minor leagues and he's about to just wreak havoc on all these minor league gladiators, then he throws the sword at Proximo and stuff. It's just great. And you have to watch it. And my wife can't understand it. It's like watching the Three Stooges where women just don't get it.
Yes. The guy stuff.
Get it. And she says, you've got the DVR. It's there underneath the TV. Anytime you want to watch Gladiator or Roadhouse, you can watch it, but you don't. But then when we're trying to watch something else and you see that it's on, you have to go flip over.
Hold on. Is your DVR clogged up like... Mine is with Lifetime, like Hallmark Hallmark Christmas movies in July.
Yes, of course.
Your DVR is 89% full.
We don't have that anymore. I guess we have a library. I'm trying to figure out exactly how to record shows under the streaming format now. I think I've got it down.
It's all on demand, right? Should be streaming. Yeah. Anyway, I got a recommendation for you, Dorn. Godfather of Harlem. Have you gotten into it?
I have not.
Forrest Whitaker. Oh,
is it good?
Bumpy Johnson, the whole 1960s.
How do you get that one?
We got to go. What's because Starkey will get mad. Oh, yeah. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you, Jim. That was
Starkey
awesome.
Getting mad for being late?
Get started.
What's going on here? Alice, you eat too many hot dogs.
Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. Visit Sun Chevy.
I'm on tomorrow. I got to promote myself.
You are on tomorrow. By yourself?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, you're by yourself?
Yeah.
Good luck
might
to
have
you.
Might have to take some phone calls.
Jesse Marshall will be joining you as you pushed him into.
I did ask him, didn't I?
Pushed him into joining your show.
I did not. He's too nice to say no.
Washington Road, McMurray, or at sunchevy.com. Today, high of 77, low of 54. Tomorrow, high of 84, low of 56.